Here in the upper Midwest, we certainly treasure the times of year when we can garden outdoors. But, of course, one of the realities we have is that for a variety of reasons, we do spend a lot of time indoors. So having a range of houseplants that are at their best in different seasons just makes a lot of sense. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Tova Martin is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She's a horticulture industry veteran, sought-after speaker and trainer. She joins us from her home in Connecticut. And Tova, thank you so much for joining us again on the Ideas Network. Really appreciate it.
I love being here, Larry.
Well, we have a lot of fun with you. I tell you what, it's great. And a lot of us have brought houseplants back indoors within the last weeks after they spent the summer outside. Limey, our lime tree is back inside after. Limey is still producing limes, too, believe me. Lots of limes. I'm going to pick one tonight, as a matter of fact, off the lime tree. Limey's going to produce that. But what should we be watching out for that might be perhaps signs of trouble as we bring these houseplants back in?
Well, you know, when you bring a plant in from outside, there's basically the best idea is to acclimate it slowly. Now, I realize that you already got frost, I'm sure. We already have had frost, am I right?
Yep.
And we, everything is probably already inside. What you should do now is just give a little double check. Make sure that you didn't bring in any insects with the troop, and just give them a check over. There's nothing wrong with checking the root system either. Some people are a little frightened of turning a plant upside down and looking at the roots, but really, that's pretty much what they're used to, so that's fine. Just turn the plant upside down. Water it gently first so the soil doesn't fall apart, but then just check the root systems, make sure that everything looks good, and then what you want to do, and this is really important, is think about where you're staging those plants.
Yeah.
You know, the plants toward the window, closest to the window, will get the most light. And if you put very tall and broad plants in front of the window, you might be blocking light for plants, closer to the room, actually.
Yeah, and your book, The Unexpected Houseplant, full of just the most beautiful photography and places to put plants and also containers, which are just so unusual, unique, oftentimes, but then also sort of everyday things as well.
Yeah, you know, I think I really am a big advocate for expanding the definition of what a container can be. You can use all kinds of things. I do a lot of drilling in the bottom to furnish drainage holes. But, you know, and I wouldn't suggest drilling your Ming vase. I even take things like buckets and drill holes in them. I have a very, what we call retro chic house. I use a lot of just recycled materials as containers. But also, Larry, another thing that I always suggest people think of is plant stands. You know, there's all mm-hmm. kinds of plant stands out there that you can buy, but there's no reason why you can. I take even step stools and use those as plant stands, all kinds of things. I turn trash cans upside down and, nice-looking ones.
Yep.
And use those as plant stands. Those old wonderful French laundry buckets that they have are so beautiful. You can get them in the antique stores. You can turn those upside down. There's no reason why you have to, you know, I see people putting plants on their finest furniture. And by the way, a cork, you can get little, you know, cork sheets that you can use underneath the plant if you're, you know, if you are putting it on nice furniture. But I always say I don't have a nice stick of furniture in the house, basically. I have a lot of sort of salvage furniture in my house.
Serviceable.
So it's not such an, yes, serviceable. That's a good idea. good word.
Well, you always talk about long-term care for houseplants, and autumn is a great time to think about long-term care, I guess. What do you mean by long-term care?
Well, what I mean is that this is, you know, you bring in plants like coleus and things like that. Well, you know, when you're bringing those in, think about giving them a little bit of a haircut because, you know, they might look a little sorry for a few weeks, but then they'll begin to grow out of that. And in the long term, they're going to look better. Due to that, you know, due to a little shearing. Larry, you do citrus.
Yeah.
Now, Limey, does he get a haircut?
Limey has not gotten a haircut yet. Limey has so many flowers on him. I hate to take him. I hate to cut anything. But I should, I suppose.
Well, Limey and all of Limey's friends and relatives there might branch out better if you find a lull, and you can do it in the spring when Limey isn't blooming or producing fruit, and give him a haircut then, because citrus really do look better when you cut them back and branch out a lot, because basically, Larry, another thing that's benefiting is that it's keeping the fruit closer to the stronger stems.
Ah.
And you know it can get weighty.
Yeah. I can see that now. Limey's bending over a little bit. Oh my goodness.
You don't want Limey to take a top.
Lynn in Westfield has a question for you, by the way. Let's go to Lynn. Hi Lynn, thanks for calling.
I've got a couple ideas, like checking the roots and giving a trim, which my husband gave a trim to this hibiscus in the spring. It's a two-year-old hibiscus, and it has usually white blooms that are very, very pretty. This year it only had two.
Uh-huh. And
I was, fertilizing it once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really worth keeping over the winter?
You know, Lynn, that is such a good question because
I can't kill it. You know, it's like I don't want to kill it. I don't want to.
But you made the call, so you must be wondering about this. Lynn, I would say that hibiscus are one of the more problematic indoor plants. They tend to attract a lot of insects like white fly and red spider mites and aphids too. And they
I had all those really problems
perform.
On my porch this summer.
Yeah. Oh.
They don't really perform that well indoors unless you have a lot of bright south light. They rarely bloom indoors. And they tend to, and I found they tend to drop leaves indoors. I think some of your listeners might agree with that.
Yes, okay. They do.
Thank you so much. I was wondering, and I've kept it alive for 2 years, and I just kind of thought, oh, I don't know. This seems like more trouble than it's worth.
Long enough, Lynn.
You've got your mileage out of it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, Bridget in Waukesha. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I have a question about Phalaenopsis orchids. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but I have a large one that I was lucky enough to inherit from a friend of mine, and it's blooming beautifully. It must like its house very well. I don't know what to do with the the stems after the blooms have been spent? Do I cut those off? And then it produces those little green, wormy type growths, and I'm not sure if I should let them grow. And the other question I have is, how do I know when it should be repotted? Do they like to be root bound, or do they prefer to have a little more room?
All really, really good questions, Bridget. On the Phalaenopsis, and you said it beautifully.
Yeah.
Those stems, the flower stems that come up, can sometimes send off what we call kikis. They can send off other more flowers sometimes, I've found. So what I personally do is, that's one of the few plants that I leave the flower stem until it does, begin to look like it's browning or something like that. I figure where there's green, there's hope. And in the Phalaenopsis case, you also asked about the white wormy roots, I think you mean. Am I right?
Yeah, those are, yes, I think you're talking about the roots.
Yeah.
Maybe, because it grows down near the base, near the top of the soil.
Yeah.
Shoot up.
Now, those are roots, and there's nothing wrong with them. You can just let them wander around. A lot of people think they look kind of cool, actually. If there's a lot of them popping up and wandering around, that's when the next question comes into the fore here, because you might need to be repotting that plant. Now, what people do with Phalaenopsis, especially in many of the orchids, is what they do is they take the roots, they take the roots out of the pot, they turn the pot upside down and check the roots, and then usually if it's in fir bark or something like that, it falls away, and they just put it in pretty much the same container with new potting medium, because you don't want that to break down. It's better if, because they are epiphytes, which means they grow in the air and the tree tops, they always want a lot of oxygen to their roots. So you don't want it to break down. Give it new potting medium and get those white worms down in there again.
Yeah, there you
okay.
go.
Okay, because I have a little tiny one that I bought. I was so happy with this big one that I inherited, and then I bought this little, one-inch pot, and I thought, gee, I don't know. I have to put in, a teaspoon of water at a time, practically. And so then...
Yeah, give that a little more room. That's the case where you wouldn't want to put it back in the same container. Give it a little. That's just a starter
okay.
plant.
Then is there a special media that I should buy to put plant in?
I work on the Phalaenopsis. I work with the fir bark. I'm very fond of that.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a good one. And some people do work with the moss. I prefer not to. I usually work with the fern bark.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Can you say that again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Fir bark. Fir bark.
F-U-R.
F-I-R.
Or F-I-R, sorry, F-I-R-B-A-R-K.
Okay, I got it. Thank you very much.
F-U-R, oh my goodness.
I know. Although I think I've made that mistake more than once.
Oh my goodness. Thanks, Bridget. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too. If you have a question for our guest today, we're talking with Tova Martin. She is the author of a dozen gardening books. And one that we've kind of talking about a bit today is the Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. It's a beautiful book. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, we'll welcome Liz Freemuth and Brian Huddleston. Yeah, Dr. Death and the Garden Hole, they're back together again. Right now, though, we're talking with Tova Martin about long-term care for our houseplants. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment, or maybe you've got a nice plant house plant photo. We'd love to see that as well. And can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Rosie in Woodruff has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Rosie. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for the program. Mm-hmm. I have a really large Schefflera plant that has grown way too tall for the room it is in. And I wanted to sort of not completely just chop off the top, but I'd like to get some of that off. And particularly what I'd like to ask your guest, is there a chance of propagating those cuttings and making them into new plants?
Good question, Rosie. I haven't worked that much with the Schefflera with propagating it, to tell you the truth. I've grown plenty of them. But what I would suggest you try is, I mean, it's certainly worth a try rather than, you know, chucking that plant.
Sure. I'm on board with that. I'll give it a little
okay.
try.
Give it a chance. But I don't believe that they branch out very, very well or quickly. But, you know, it's worth a try, and it's certainly worth a try to root it. Something you can also try is grafting it, sort of air layering it, taking and putting a little bit, sort of making a notch in the stem toward the top, and then putting some moss and a baggie around it, you know, if you can find sort of a dark baggie. And that, then it will make roots around, you know, the roots will begin to form, and those, you know, while it's still attached, and you
sure.
can take those off eventually and start a new plant.
Oh, and as far as the actual just chopping off the top, that shouldn't really hurt the plant. If anything, it might just sprout some new stuff, but you don't see, it's not going to kill the plant to just top it off a bit.
It probably won't kill, but I'm not sure if it will re-sprout. I haven't worked that much with Schefflera,
okay.
to tell you the truth,
okay.
on that particular one.
I would be happy if it would not re-sprout because it keeps getting too tall for the room, so that wouldn't actually be a problem. But thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Mary Lou in Fitchburg. Hi there.
Hi. Hey, listen, about the hibiscus. We, unlike the previous caller, we have one that's between 4 and 5 feet tall. It's several years old. It loves being indoors. It flowers in the winter. The question is, should we prune it back, and when?
You can definitely prune those back.
Okay.
No problem at all. And I would do it, you know, I would do it now when you're
okay.
putting it in. They're usually, you know, they're a little at 4 to 5 feet is probably kind of wide too, and you might want to just cut it back. I do that I've done that with hibiscus that I've babysat for other people while
okay.
they're on, you know, traveling or something. You can definitely do that, and that's a way to keep the insect problem at bay. You know, there's no foliage, so there's nothing for them to pester, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks
Thank
so
you.
Much for calling. And by the way, we did have a Facebook comment from Therese who said she's been bringing her hibiscus in for 7 years now. It does get a lot of south sun, and it's blooming like crazy, the pretty burnt red orange color. It looks great.
Well, that's the secret, Larry, sun for those. Because
yeah.
if you can give them something that's, you know, similar to an outdoor environment, you're keeping them healthy, and a healthy plant, this is big shtick of mine, a healthy plant will be much less prone to insect problems. Keep it, you know, remember to keep your plants watered regularly. Don't let them dry out. Certainly don't let them wilt. And they'll be less prone to insect problems.
Let's turn to Kim in Mequon next. Hi, Kim. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. I just have a quick question. We have a rubber tree that my husband garbage picked when he was a little boy. And his mom had it, and then we inherited it. And, you know, normally you see the rubber trees and the leaves are big and huge and, you know, darker. I just have a ton of little ones. We haven't transplanted it. You know, I water it. Sometimes, though, we get mold on top of it. And I'm just so scared to do anything because if that plant dies, I am in serious trouble. So I don't feed it. I don't know what to do with it.
And this is a rubber tree?
Yeah.
And I assume what you mean is the regular, you know, ficus that's used as you know, to make rubber. That's a very, very rock solid, easy to grow houseplant. It was way back in the Victorian era. They worked with those, and they were, you know, very, very popular novelties at the time. But they're really pretty close to unkillable. You'll be glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And
should I transplant it and give it some fresh soil? Because I haven't done that in
years. You can definitely give it some fresh soil. If it's a very tall plant, you might, you know, you might think at some point of doing the, you know, what they call air layering, propagating thing on it. And certainly if it shows any signs of problems, definitely do that. It's a shiny leaf, so you can... you can usually just wash off any problems on that leaf. It's not prone to mildew or anything. So just, you know, give it a little bit of a wash, and that should help any type of problems in that department. And, you know, you might think of also, it's a low-light plant, but just think of, you know, rotating it to make sure every exposure gets light. It's
okay.
An important thing with houseplants because they are suddenly getting light from only one direction.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks,
thank
Kim.
Thank you.
We had caller John in Green Bay compost his dead houseplants. He knows that we're not supposed to compost black walnut leaves, for instance, because they'll poison plants that the compost is applied to. He wonders if there are any house plants that should not be composted for that very reason.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's a good one. I hadn't thought of that.
Wow, I hadn't thought of that either. Because, of course, the black walnut sends out toxins from its roots. And I know of no house plant that does that. And, in fact, I don't think there are many houseplants in that family, you know, related to black walnut. So I would say, gee, if anybody out there hears about it or knows of anything, I'd love to hear about it, but I can't think of anything right offhand.
No, I can't. I can't either. It'd be interesting. We may get a call. You never know. We'll find out. In the meantime, let's go to Deborah in Oostburg. Deborah, hello.
Hello. Oh, thanks so much. This is always a wonderful show. And as I shared with someone, I temporarily inherited a banana tree from my son who just moved from the South. Had it on our patio in the summer, and it was great. Knew to probably bring it inside, and it has a horrible odor. What is that?
Would that horrible... I think I know the source of the horrible odor.
It's horrendous.
Well, I think what happens with bananas and many of those vase-shaped plants is that water gets kind of stuck in the crevices. And that can get to smelling pretty bad. You know what water it smells like when you forget to clean out the bouquet vase. Well, smelling like that. So I think that's your problem. And what I think you should do is when you get a... I know it weighs a ton, and I'm sorry about this, but on a warmer day, just run that thing outside, turn it as much as you can upside down, get out a hose, and clean out those crevices. I think that's where you're running amok, literally.
Certainly, bring
bringing it inside was the right thing to do.
I mean,
You would not have a banana tree anymore.
No, it's it'll be fine over the winter, and it'll give you, you know, they can sort of slip into dormancy and lose leaves, but they usually stay quite alive.
Oh, good, great. Oh, I appreciate this. Thanks so much.
Yep, thanks, Deb.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Doris in Green Bay. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I've been waiting for this show. I had received a big peace lily for a funeral plant, and it was like a bush. And it had one flower, and then it quit, and never could get it to bloom again. Now it's been divided last month into three pots into three households. What should we do to get that to bloom again? And also, I wanted to know how long to keep the poinsettia in the dark before it'll start over blooming again.
That's a really good idea, Doris. The peace lily, to divide it between friends. That's such a wonderful thing that you can do with houseplants, is share them, especially the ones that can be divided. It sort of brings families and friends together. And your peace lily, since you divided it, what you don't want to do is give it too much root room. When you pot it, just the roots shouldn't be swimming in new soil, because it, first of all, it doesn't dry out as quickly, but also it takes a little bit longer to produce the flowers. So you want to keep it, you know, tightly potted, not you know, crammed in there, but not too much extra space. And I think that's why it hasn't been blooming. Now, it's not a highlight plant, so you don't really need to worry about a south window on it, but it might not bloom so well in north, so give it east or west if you want flowers on that. On the poinsettia, they do need they start to grow again. They do need a period where they don't get, you know, light. And I can't remember, Larry, do you remember how many weeks that is?
It's several weeks, and if they get exposed to any light, you have to start all over again.
Yeah, and that light, that means even street lamps.
Yeah.
If
you forget and open up the closet door, you're done.
Yes. It really is, they do need the diminished light time, and Larry, I'm thinking it is like 2 months or so.
I thought 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So
of when they don't get light, and then that gets the whole bract thing started, and that's what you're trying to jumpstart.
Which is why I always buy new every year.
I'm a big advocate for that. I'm with you on that one, Larry.
Yeah, for sure. That one is just too much. It's too finicky, and you can get such. Frankly, they're usually fairly inexpensive anyway.
And every year they come up with new ones.
Yeah, new colors and everything. It's fun.
Oh, gosh, they're great ones.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
all right. I have to keep opening the door and take out the coat and also water the plant. So
yeah, you're. I think you should join. You should join Tova and me on this one, Doris. Thanks a lot for calling. By the way, we have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your houseplant question. As we talk with Tova Martin today, she's the author of many books, including The Unexpected Houseplant. And we also have, if you go to my Facebook page, we have a link to her work and to her and her site, her website. So please do that as well. But call us now at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Nancy in Watertown next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
I wanted to mention, in addition to my question, that I was just reading Melinda Meyer's book that you can compost the leaves, just not the husks from black walnuts.
Oh.
On the, that's good to know. On the black walnut?
I don't think so. There may be a mistake there.
Yeah, I thought it was all parts.
Yeah, I think it's all parts.
I was just reading Melinda's book last night. But what my problem is my happy bamboo doesn't look so happy anymore. The leaves are sort of getting brownish. The only fertilizer I've given it is sprayed it with kelp.
Is kelp? Yeah. If the leaves now, some of the bamboos go dormant, and I don't know exactly which one you've got, but if some of them do, you know, have a little bit of a dormancy period. Many of them are just, you know, so unkillable that it's not an issue.
The happy bamboo. It just grows in water.
Oh, okay. It just grows in water. Okay.
Yeah.
And, well, then you, I was going to suggest maybe repotting, but I guess that's not an, it's not one of the things you could do on that one. And you could definitely, any type of fertilizer, like, have you tried putting a little in the water?
Yeah, but I don't know, maybe I should use more of a plant food then.
You might want to try.
Kelp probably doesn't supply everything.
Well, kelp is not balanced. It's true, but personally, I don't use kelp. I use fish emulsion, which could get a little stinky in some water. But you just toss it out and put fresh water in afterwards. So I've actually on the kelp. I prefer the fish emulsion personally.
Mm-hmm.
I just used some kelp fertilizer for the first time. I was trying the kelp instead of the fish emulsion, and I found that it left a little bit of a residue on top of my soil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I usually just spray use it as a spray for foliage. So, okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. That fish emulsion, Limey gets fish emulsion for a fertilizer. And you know what we do, since we're gone all day, Limey gets that in the morning, just before we leave. And by the time we come home,
the cat is smiling.
Tiger and Coco are smiling, but and Limey is too, because Limey's gotten some fish emulsion, and we don't smell it anymore.
I that's what I always say, Larry. I always say, put on the fish emulsion and go shopping.
Well, we go off to work. There you go.
Yeah.
Nancy in Grafton. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. One more story about a hibiscus. Our son Leo drowned back on December 10th, 2000. And so we received a hibiscus bush plant for the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's 13 years ago almost. And every year that plant goes outside, and every fall it comes back in. And every time a new blossom comes, it's, hi, Leo, you know. And in the winter time, then the leaves all fall off. I have it upstairs in the south window. And the leaves all fall off. And then it gets all new leaves and blossoms again. And it's like a resurrection. And it's a story that touches my heart.
Oh.
You know, houseplants can do that. They are wonderful, you know, memorials.
Yep.
and I just love that story. Every time a flower appears, it's meaningful for you. That's like everything. And they kind of molt, and they come back again.
That's right.
They come back again in aces, really. They just come right back up again.
It's a lesson for all of us.
Yeah, it really is.
On All Saints Day today.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I'm so sorry for your loss, but thank you so much for calling and sharing that. I appreciate that very much, Nancy. Wow. What a great story. Sad story, but if there could be any kind of happy ending, that was it for sure.
And it speaks about
how meaningful these things are.
Yes.
They're therapeutic. They really are. I really feel that they are. Just, you know, you out there in Wisconsin, you've got winter. We've got winter. I'm in New England.
Yeah.
And we need green nearby. We really do. We all do. It's so important to us.
And I agree with you 100%. And Carolyn Appleton has a question for you, I think. Let's go to Carol. Hi, Carol. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I don't have a question, but I do have an issue with some comments that were made a few minutes ago about poinsettias. I have worked in a greenhouse that grows thousands of poinsettias for over 20 years. And they are not, to bring them around again, they are not to be put in total darkness for 2 months. They want an even amount of light, 12 hours light and 12 hours of total darkness. That's where your street light might create a problem. But it's not total darkness. They need daylight and dark.
Okay.
You are so right. And that was my mistake. They don't want to be in that closet. Absolutely. They don't want to be in that closet all day and all night. That would be the end for that poinsettia. They do need light during the day, but they definitely don't want it at night. Thank you for.
And if they do get it at night, that was the issue. If they do get
it, that is the issue. Yeah.
If they do get it at night,
that would set it back.
Yep.
So, Carol, thank you so much for
a good yeah. We've got that straight, and I'm glad that you straightened us out on that. Sue and Mequon, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. I'm an avid tropical gardener, so I take all my tropicals in and outside each year, keep them in the same pots. And 2 years ago, my pots also have water reservoirs underneath, built into the pot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, I brought in my tropicals, and I had some on the dining room table, and I sprinkled the insecticide into the soil to kill whatever critters were in there. And about 5 minutes later, I was walking past that table, and there was a great big toad on my table. Who probably did not like the taste of that water. So just a tip for people who do this, to make sure you pop off those receptacles and make sure you don't bring any toads in your house.
Very good suggestion.
That's a good idea. Absolutely. Wildlife, which we don't always think about, into your house.
Thank you, Sue. Thanks very much. Tova Martin, our guest today, the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening to this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Tova Martin, author of The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. And she's got a bunch more as well. I think right around a dozen gardening books. So it's always great to have her come by and visit with us. And certainly you can join in at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post a question, or even if you got a nice houseplant photo, we'd love to see that too. On my Facebook page, for that, go to The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Linda in Milwaukee next. Linda, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you today? Say, listen, I was listening earlier and they were talking about orchids and the roots that come out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How do you know which one is a root and which one will now turn into another branch that will produce flowers? Because I've got one, I actually have two, but one of them grew like crazy. The two stems finally died, so I did cut those off. But it's got the little green rhizomes, I guess you would call them. One's going straight up and the other two are going down. Will the one that's going straight up actually form into a branch that will get new flowers? And if not, how do I get it to grow a new branch to get more flowers?
Is it green, the one that's shooting up?
Yep.
Yeah. The roots Well, some of the roots can look kind of greenish, too, but usually the roots come from down below, unless it's very moist. But the flowering branches that come up, that shoot up and form blossoms, they sort of form, it's usually kind of like a time segment. They don't often bloom heavily yet in autumn, but they blossom more toward winter, and they just kind of shoot up. There's not a whole lot you can do besides just caring for it well to provoke that.
So do you think the one that's shooting up will turn into a branch? Because it's actually right below the last leaf. And it actually, the leaves that are on it, all have grown since I've had this plant.
Mm-hmm. Usually they make leaves at the base and just at the base.
Right.
So the flowering spike that comes up is not really a stem, so to speak. It's more like a flower spike, and it will have only flowers on it. The roots come down from, more toward the base like most plants. There can be aerial roots, but usually not up on the flower spike. So you might be getting a whole lot of flowers in your future.
This plant was amazing. It flowered every February to March for the last 4 years that I've had it.
Oh.
It has bloomed beautifully.
Then
I have another
you.
One someone gave me that had two flower spikes on it when I got it, and they bloomed amazingly, and now they're all gone. Now, was that correct to, like, cut those dead stems off, or should I have left them sit there? Because then you could tell they just turned brown and shriveled all the way to the base.
Then they're ready to be cut off, and yes.
Right. Okay,
clean
so that's
that up,
what I did.
Tidy that up. They are ready. And by the way, if anybody wants to post pictures on the Larry Mueller website or Facebook page, rather. Facebook page, oh. I will be monitoring it this afternoon and evening, and I can help if you've got a picture and you want to put it up. I can take a look at it and try to see what if I can dissect which is which.
Ah.
And one actually is in moss. And one actually is in that wood chip stuff you were talking about.
Yes.
So I don't know if I should repot them or just leave them. That's the other question.
Experts suggest that you do it about once a year. Just give it a new medium underfoot because, again, those break down and they compact too much. And that way, and therefore, the plant, the roots, which really like a lot of oxygen, they're getting a little smothered-ish. So experts usually say once a year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well,
there you go.
I've had this one for 4 years, and all I ever done is water it.
Oh.
If you do.
Just growing like crazy. Oh, well, thank you
I would wait until those flowers, it's finished with those flowers, to tell you the truth, rather than interrupt that.
I would not interrupt that.
Yeah.
No. Thanks, Linda, for calling. Appreciate it. Denny in Sugar Camp, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. 25 years ago when we were on vacation in Florida, when we stopped for gas at a truck stop, I bought a little 99-cent orange tree.
Yeah.
And I've had it for 25 years, and I keep trimming it back to keep it in the house as a houseplant, but it's never bloomed. It's never had oranges or anything, and I'm just wondering, will it ever? Is there anything I can do? I guess that's my question.
Wow. 25 years.
Wow.
You are one patient fella.
That's for sure.
25 years. Usually we consider 7 years from seed to be the amount of time that takes for citrus to begin to make fruit. Has it ever bloomed any?
No.
What I'm thinking is try giving it a little more light. Try making sure, you know, that the roots, it's not too pot bound and it's not too over potted. And beside that,
don't fertilize the heck out of it. Do not do that.
Yeah. Although if the foliage is good color, I'm sure you know from Limey that it tells you when it's hungry.
Oh yeah, Limey. In fact, Denny, you should bring your orange tree over and set it next to Limey. Limey could show it how to flower. I can tell you that.
Well, Larry, maybe you should send over a picture of Limey for inspiration. He can print it out and show it to Orangey.
I gotta post a picture of Limey. I'll do that. I'll take a photo on the weekend and we'll post it.
And your orange tree will just be it'll be inspired.
Oh boy! Well, we're not much help here, Denny. But we.
Well, I was wondering, is there such a thing as like a male tree, or do I, is it just?
Not on the oranges.
No.
And any plant they would blossom first before producing fruit. The blossoms are the first. And Larry, talk about that fragrance for us.
Oh, it's such. You come into the bedroom, and Limey's in the bedroom right now because that's where the south-facing window is. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful citrus aroma.
Isn't it wonderful? That's the fragrance everybody loves.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, when I crush the leaves, you get that real orangey smell.
True.
Yeah.
True. But we're not going to, neither Larry or I are going to tell you to give up.
No. Well, it doesn't sound like you're the kind of guy that gives up either. 25 years with that plant.
No.
And I
keep on trying.
Keep on trying. Thank
you. Give it as much light as you possibly can. Can you get it outside in the summer?
I do put it outside in the summer and then bring it in the fall.
Yeah. One thing I do, we have grow lights, and we have the
low spectrum.
They don't use a lot of electricity.
Low intensity, yeah.
The new kind of grow lights that don't use a lot of electricity, and they're on. It's Limey gets that all day long, along with the south facing window. So a lot of light. Ours gets a lot of light.
And you might also, Denny, try rotating again. I'm a big proponent of rotating the plant around so that it gets it from all sides. And you might be surprised. We're expecting that on the next show you're gonna phone in and you're gonna say, "Orangey blossoms."
I love it. Good luck, Denny. Thanks. And Charles and Ellsworth, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes?
Yes, hi.
Yes, I have these hostas. I bring them inside during the winter, but I have these, it has started to turn brown, and I found like these little slugs. So I asked my brother, because he gave them to me, and he said to pick up some beer and kind of put it in a little cup near it. So I did. It didn't work. The hostas were still dying. I bought some Jack Daniel's spiced rum. I put that out there, still nothing. But my neighbor came over the next day and said he got a knock on his door during the middle of the night, and these slugs were just wasted. They came up and just started to...
Charles and Ellsworth, you are a character. I will say that for you.
They were partying all night at your place, weren't they? I've heard that Budweiser's a favorite.
They'll drink pretty much anything, I think. Oh boy, Lisa in Detroit. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tova. It's Lisa Steinkopf. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I have a question. I had a customer bring a Hoya that she's had since 1964 in the same pot, And she wants me to repot it, and I know it's not the right time of year, but she has it under lights, so I thought it would be okay. And it's going from a 6-inch, so I was going to put it in an 8-inch. But the problem is that it's the root system, because, you know, it's been in there since 1964, there's not much soil left, so it's a very short soil ball, a root ball. Is it okay to put that up in 6-inch? Would you do that?
Would you go
say that again?
Would you go to a 10-inch?
No. Would you go to an 8-inch, or would you keep it in a 6-inch and just repot it in the pot?
Lisa's a good friend from my Facebook page. And what I would say is that on the Hoyas, you know, Hoyas aren't really grateful for a whole lot of repotting. They prefer to be pot-bound. They really do. So many people inherit Hoyas or have them since 1964, as Lisa does, and they think, oh, I'm going to be good to this.
And repot.
And
so don't do that.
Don't do that.
Stay with the 6-inch. Stay with the 6-inch. Oh, man. Tova Martin is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She's a horticulture industry veteran and a sought-after speaker and trainer. And you can see why. She does such a wonderful job and joining us today from her home in Connecticut. Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Friday, of course, means Garden Talk, and today we're turning our attention to the plants that share our homes and other indoor spaces. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along with us for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Tova Martin is the author of a dozen gardening books, including The Unexpected Houseplant, 220 Extraordinary Choices for Every Spot in Your Home. She's a horticulture industry veteran, sought-after speaker and trainer, and joins us from her home in Connecticut. And Tova, thanks again for spending time with us on Garden Talk.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I am having so much fun.
Isn't this good time?
This is so much fun.
So many people who enjoy gardening and enjoy their plants, and it's always great to hear from them. Dana in Madison has a question for you, and so why don't we just turn right to her? Hi, Dana.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
I forgot, I'm not supposed to say how you doing. I have an ivy plant that is actually started out outdoors. I'm trying to get it to grow indoors. It's a transplant, and for sentimental reasons, I'd like it to get going. I thought I had killed it because the leaves and the stem got very brittle. But then another day or so later, a little shoot of green, healthy-looking ivy popped out of the soil. So I'm wondering what's the best way not to kill this little one. Should I probably was overwatering it previously. So should I just, when the soil is dry, just water
it
again, or?
And it's always hard to diagnose over the phone, but
sure.
That would definitely be, you know, if you let it dry out too much, the ivies don't like that.
Okay.
But also they don't like to be overwatered.
Mm-hmm.
So just when the soil is dry to the touch. Now, that said, some people overpot the ivies because, you know, they look like they've got so much going on, up, you know, hair-wise.
Mm-hmm.
They're big hair plants. you might want to don't give it a huge pot, even though it looks like it's, you know, out there and running. Keep the root system fairly compacted.
Okay, it's in one now that has about a 4-inch diameter, but the shoot that popped up is only about an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch large. The leaf
mm-hmm.
on it.
You might want to just hold the status quo on that. And I always suggest that when a plant is ailing, it's not always the best time to give it either the breakfast of champions or a whole new house.
Uh-huh. That makes sense. And then about how much light should it be getting?
It likes to have east or west window would be optimal.
Okay.
Ivies are one of the few plants that could go into north. But if you put it in north, you'd have to put it really close to the panes. It's not optimal, and south can be a little too much. It can actually burn.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks very much.
Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you. Appreciate your call.
You know, Tova, we've talked a lot and heard from callers who have had, you know, they bought an orange plant for 90 cents, and here it is 25 years later, they still got that plant. That's a long-lived plant. I'm wondering about some of the different varieties of houseplants that might be long-lived types. Do you have some that you like that are long-lived?
I do, and, you know, I bet you a lot of people inherited houseplants. I would love to hear from you because those are always wonderful stories. But there are plants that go, Larry, not only, you know, 20 years, but generations.
Yeah.
Begonias, for example. Begonias are infinitely inheritable plants. They're heirloom plants, meaning that they keep going and going and going. They are popular. Things like that, you know, people inherit calanchoes. They inherit the serious night blooming serious plants. They inherit epiphones of all types, the Christmas cactus, and that sort of thing. There are many plants that keep going and going and going. Jade plants. A lot of people inherit jade plants, and they look beautiful when they get older. But sometimes you have to think about what you're going to do with that plant over the long haul. Like begonias, if you've got an angel wing or cane type begonia, you really need to keep cutting it back. Geraniums are the same way. They can live for generations. They really can, but you kind of have to put them through what I call a molt. Think about what they're gonna look like. Cut them back and let them regrow, and it gives them new life.
Very good points. Very good points. Joyce in Mount Horeb has a question for you, Tova, so I want to give her a chance. Joyce, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. This is Joyce Powers. I am an outdoor plant person, and so my house plants often suffer, but I've come to love them a lot, and I have a couple questions. One is about a jade plant. I thought it was on its last legs, so I put it out on my back deck in the north light for the summer, and boom, it revived, and it's flourishing at this point. But I noticed that on the leaves, on the top surface of the leaves, after I brought it in, there's a brown something. It's smooth, and it looks like, you know, it could be a fungus, except it's really smooth. And if you touch it, it just feels rough on the leaf. And it's not on all the leaves, but it's on several, kind of toward the top of the plant. And I've never seen that. I don't know. And then those leaves will drop. It's only been indoors for about a week, but I thought I'd ask you, what do I do with that? What's going on?
Now, Joyce, I think what happened on this plant, and, you know, it's always hard to diagnose over the phone, but
right,
what I think happened is I think it somehow got sunburned somewhere in this configuration. Even though you said north,
get some sun at the last part of the day. There was a little bit of sun that it got. And it looked like it just loved it. You know, it really did well, but now I'm noticing these bruises or something.
I had a similar situation. It wasn't a jade, but it was a close relative. And I thought that inside it had as much light as it could possibly get, but I was wrong. I got a little bit of sun for one day suddenly, and whammo, there was that exactly what you're talking about, like a pebbling of brown on the top leaf.
Top surface, yes.
That's sunburn. And there's not much you can do retroactively on that one. What you could do, mine didn't fall off. They just stayed on, but they were a little bit unsightly. You might have to, when it grows a little more, you might have to cut off the sunburnt part. But it does, there's no harm to any other.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, maybe it happened. You see, what I did was I was thinking because the light is decreasing so much here, so I put it kind of close to a southern window. Maybe I need to just move it back. How much light would it like in the winter here?
I'm surprised that jades don't require more light, but they don't. They are, you know, in the succulent group. You'd think they would need it, but they don't. The jades are great in east or west.
Okay.
South, you know, it's hard to say. Everybody's south is a different south. If you've got, some people don't realize that if they've got, like, a water source, like a lake or something, or the ocean or something like that, near a window, that will affect, you know, that'll be more light. Yes, it will reflect. Even snow reflects, actually.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, even snow can reflect on a plant.
Okay, and then I have another question. Thank you so much. That's really helpful. I have another question. I have a inherited Christmas cactus from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And now all my kids have branches of it, okay? I've got this lovely Christmas cactus that it loves it outdoors, and I put it out on an east exposure for summer, and that seems to do really, really well, so it gets half-day sun. Now I've brought it in, and what I'm wondering is I want to begin to fertilize it so that it will bloom. And I've got this crazy question. Can I, I'm trying to think of what the numbers are, but I think it's an 8-10-10 Miracle-Gro formulation that you normally use, like for tomatoes or things like that. But could I do that for the Christmas cactus?
You can certainly fertilize that, especially if it's in, you know, it's your a mother's plant that's in a pot that it's always been in, and you want to hold the status quo. You don't want to keep repotting it because it can get big and heavy if you're bringing
right.
it outside. I'm sure you know that.
Right.
But what you usually we say balanced, but I think that's close enough to balanced. I always suggest when you're fertilizing, remember, you know, to read the directions on your container, give it the dilution that they suggest. And
okay.
Since we're talking about that in long-term care, let's just talk a minute about fertilizing, because I don't usually do it between Thanksgiving and March 1st.
Oh, you don't?
I don't.
No.
I leave off on fertilizing unless something is really looking like the foliage is getting pale-ish. Now, Larry, that your citrus might need food. Am I right?
Yeah.
That's a very hungry plant.
It's a very hungry, and it's producing a lot of fruit.
Yeah.
So,
so there are exceptions. And I always, you know, in gardening, you want to, the first person you answer to is your plant, okay?
Right. Exactly.
So if your plant is saying to you, don't listen to Tova Martin, I'm hungry, you listen to your plant.
Oh, man.
Well, I have no idea. I just know that I normally water it. Once I bring it in the house, I water it usually once a week, and it blooms beautifully. But I just wasn't sure if I should give it a little bit of, you know, more toward the blooms than toward the green growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would suggest, you know, give it, you know, I'm, to tell you the truth, I gave every one of my plants a little food when I brought it in, just, you know, to help it get acclimated. And you probably have one more opportunity to fertilize, and then I would give it a little bit of a lull. Check your leaves; they turn yellow. That's when it's telling you, "Listen to me, I'm hungry."
There you go, Joyce. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Good to hear your voice. Joyce is actually a pretty good plant person herself, and has been a guest on this show a time or two.
Oh, okay.
She's talking about different kinds of plants than what we're talking about today, but Janice in Grafton has a question for you. Janice, hi.
Hi. Thank you for the program. Why did my fig plant continue to lose leaves after I brought it in from outside all summer, and I'm not sure, should I fertilize it or what?
No, 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 no. Your fig tree, if it's a fruiting fig, it wants to take the winter off. It's going dormant, and that's what it's supposed to do. It's going to look a lot like a stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They almost look like that now.
Yeah.
It's gonna look a little sad for a little while, but it will next spring. It will jump right back up into foliage again. Just you want to just let it go into its dormancy period right now. Don't forget to water it entirely, but water it less often, and just let it go into its holding pattern. But that's so totally normal. For its cycle.
Oh, okay. And then I have a statement about a hibiscus plant. You've been talking about that. Mine was just about almost dead looking. In fact, it looked dead. And I decided to prune it severely. And then after a period of time, I kept watering it. And luckily, it came back to life. And so it's just...
They will, that's a plant, hibiscus is a plant you can cut right back, and again, we were mentioning that it is prone to insects and doors. That's a way to minimize the insects because no foliage for them to bother.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then my husband had a question about the Agapanthus lily, why it never bloomed.
And that usually blooms over the summer, and it's a light thing. Sometimes they have to be a little older to bloom well. They don't usually bloom at all in the winter much, so your only chance really is summer. And you could have over-potted it to put it in too large a container. That could be
should he be fertilizing that?
Right now I would let it, if you're bringing it indoors, which you're going to have to, did already, I hope. It's not gonna help to fertilize it now. So I would just leave it, let it go into a little bit of a resting period, and then bring it out again in the summer.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Janice.
Thank you.
And Diana in Wilton. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that I dug up a Sansevieria in my yard when I lived in Florida. And I still have it, and that was 1974.
Oh.
And it blooms. I've cut it in half a couple of times, and I still have it. So it's a great remembrance of my time in Florida.
Almost 40 years old.
Right.
Almost. Not only that, Diana, but, that I didn't mention that when Larry and I were talking about plants that have a long longevity, but Sansevieria is definitely a pass-along plant to the next generation and the generation after that. They will just keep going and going and going.
Go ahead, Diana.
Well, and this isn't that long, but I do have one of those little Christmas Norfolk Island pines that are about 7 inches tall that you get in the holidays, and I've had that for probably maybe 12 years now, and it's taller than I am.
That's wonderful.
So, that's wonderful. And I bet you does it stand in for a Christmas tree?
I'm sorry, does it what?
Stand in as a Christmas tree.
It does have red bows on it.
Aww.
Yes, I guess it does.
And Diana, I hope you have a chance, and I'm just mentioning this now for the first time, I hope you have a chance to go to my Facebook page, because there is, Jerry sent a picture of a Sansevieria that is absolutely beautiful. You got a beautiful Sansevieria.
Okay, I will take a look at it, Larry.
A great photo. Yeah, thank you, and thanks so much for calling.
Oh, great show. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Could you, geraniums, Kathy in Greystoke, Illinois, wondered about geraniums inside. What do you do when the leaves all start to drop? I think you just kind of leave them alone, or do you?
Yes. the thing about, whoops, I just lost your Facebook page here. I'll get it back again in a minute. The geranium, when it begins to lose leaves in the autumn when you bring it in, they actually make great houseplants, Larry, and bloom. They blossom in the middle of the winter, and it's such a cheerful thing, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
bright red flower in the middle of the winter is worth a million in summer, I think.
Yeah.
But what I do is I cut them back. Those, you know, there's no reason why you should need to look at that tall, gangly stem. Just right now, take and cut it back, and then it will rejuvenate and send out shoots and be a much prettier plant in the middle of the winter when you really need those blossoms.
Here's another question. Deborah wonders if you recommend rooting hormone. She finds it useful, very useful.
I do. I always use a rooting hormone when I'm rooting a plant, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because you can really take and root those cuttings and have more pass along geraniums for your, you know, family and friends. It's a great little hostess gift.
Yeah.
I love it when people come and bring a little cutting of something that's dear to them. It means a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Carol says, I have my grandmother's Hoya, a vining succulent. My husband hates the smell of the blossoms. The plant is at least 60 years old, and I'm not getting rid of it. They relegate it to the spare bedroom when it's blooming.
I like that powdery scent, but, you know, scent is such a personal thing. Everybody has their, and different Hoyas actually have different scents. There's one that smells just like cinnamon. I don't know how anybody could not like it, but some of the other ones are kind of, a little musky.
Can you make a begonia into a houseplant?
Begonias, well, it depends. The tuberous ones don't make good houseplants, Larry, because they're, you know, they go winter dormant. But most of the other types, like the, I grow the rhizomatous type, wonderful houseplants. And maybe you're also talking about the wax-leaved begonias. I've seen them grown as houseplants, and there's hybrids like the dragon wing series that uses that family because it's so floriferous, and they make great houseplants. But some of the wax type are, you know, need a little more light than we can usually give them in a window.
Yep.
I would go for the hybrid ones, like the dragon wing types.
Tova, it's such a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I know you're going to hang around at least on our Facebook page, check in a time or two through the afternoon. And so if people have some photos or even maybe another question or two, you could help out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to having her back. Tova Martin, her book is The Unexpected Houseplant, and her website, TovaMartin.com. Go there. She's got lots of great information on there, including a lot of information about her other books. She has a dozen of them, a dozen gardening books. Great to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.